Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 185th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. And during the show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is Ayman Najim. He was born and raised in Gaza, Palestine. His family were refugees in their own country after being removed from their family land, which was reorganized from being Palestine to Israel in 1948. Ayman had the opportunity to study in Baghdad, Iraq for his bachelor's degree and came to the United States in 2012, later earning his master's degree in intercultural service in 2015 in Brattleboro, Vermont. Ayman is a human rights activist, an expert in healing trauma, father of two, and has publicly spoken in 27 U.S. states, 75 locations. It's an honor to have you here with me today, Ayman. Thank you for coming to New Mainers Speak.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
So I really want to try to get a picture of life on the Gaza Strip. If you would help me kind of construct that image, what's, you know, Gaza is one of the most densely populated places on the planet. About 1.8 million people in a strip of land that's 25 miles long by 3 to 7 miles wide at places. That's roughly 13,000 people per square mile, by contrast with Portland, which is just 3,000 miles, people per square mile. The entire state is bordered by checkpoints. There are no working airports, and there's difficulty moving even within the neighborhoods freely. Can you describe for me what a normal Sunday might have looked like for you and your family when you were a child, as far as...
Thank you for having me. Sure. Again. So Gaza is a tiny enclave of land, and as there are 1.8 million are living in Gaza, and in every one square miles, you are talking about 7,000 to 13,000 in every mile. So that's why it is the most densely populated area on the planet. And it is also the largest urban prison in the human history.
Urban prison. It's completely also, surrounded, right?
Yeah, it is surrounded. It is surrounded by sea, by land, by air. So in Gaza, there is no seaport. There is no... you cannot go to for fishing in the sea because you have just 3 nautical miles in order to go fishing. So, and also, if you go to travel, there are 2 crossings in Gaza. One is it is called Erez crossing, that you can go from Gaza to the West Bank, and it is controlled by Israel. And there is one Rafah crossing, which is in the south of Gaza, which is controlled by Egypt, which is between Gaza and Egypt. So so Gaza, in a nutshell, Gaza is a combination of Warsaw Ghetto and a concentration camp. How? Because you have people who are stranded for the last 11 years, and also they were kicked out from their country for the last 70 years, and they have been stranded. When you mentioned in your talk that I am about refugee, I am like my father was a refugee and my mom. I was born as a refugee in my own country. That's why they called us a refugee, or even under the international law, international community, it should be called internally displaced people who came from one area to another. But the name started to be a refugee in that time. And we became a refugee in our own country, where my great-great-father and my grandfather were born in Ashdod, which is called right now in Hebrew Ashdod, which is, I have never been there. I have never been in the West Bank in my entire life. It is just 20 minutes by drive. I have never been in my own, the other part of my country, because of the occupation of Palestine, and because the electricity right now, if we can talk about the present moment, there is no electricity in Gaza, just 2 hours a day. So the water, it is undrinkable water. And this is one of the most human needs In Gaza, where you go, you don't have water, or you don't have drinking water.
That sets you up for disease and disease, a humanitarian crisis.
And even the sewage crisis, like in the sea, like because there is no way to treat that sewage, and because people are under siege, under a crippling siege, a very crippling siege for the last 11 years. And also women with breast cancer, children with trauma, with PTSD, with ACD, with difficult physical diseases. They cannot go outside of Gaza for medical treatment. Brilliant students. In Palestine, especially in Gaza, they have the highest holders of PhD across the world per capita. Even they are living under extreme incubation and extreme poverty. Like 80% of the family income go to education in Gaza. If you look into Gaza, just looking it up, you will find most of the people are extremely well educated and they have to get a bachelor degree or like a master degree.
Isn't that amazing? Even with not enough water and food and sewage treatment, you still prioritize education.
Because this is our only hope, and also because Palestine is the epicenter of all conflicts. And we strive to tell people our truth, our justice, our longing for justice, for love, for peace. We were born into that. We did not choose. No one chose to be born as a refugee or to be born as like in a very occupied country, as no one chose to be a religious or to be born as this or this. So it is very important for me to mention that Gaza is very ancient. Gaza, my hometown, is Deir el-Balah, is the chapel of the date palm, which is like very, very Roman Christian.
Chapel of the date palm?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like, you just count, it's very ancient. Jericho, which is in the West Bank, is the ancient town in history. So when you talk about like Gaza being Gaza in Gaza, so you see that Gaza is bleeding every minute. Yesterday, before we speak, people are murdered. Kids, 15 years old kid was murdered. And other 16 years old kid were murdered without compunction or remorse. And when we are talking about that trauma level in Gaza, we are talking about 93% of traumatized children. We are talking about every child experienced more than 4 traumatic experiences in his life. And we are talking about indirect trauma. Imagine direct trauma, which means that they have experienced it. And we are dealing with too many things related to children, related to women, related to the senior citizens who are trying to get a treatment for themselves. And they cannot access, they cannot go outside. And
the dwellings are filled with people, correct? Like you would have 10 people in a room this size that nobody can see.
Yeah, also like in terms of density in Gaza, like I was born like in a very poor family. I have 4 brothers and 4 sisters, and we were living in one room. Like, and I lived all of the incubation in my life. I wasn't able as a kid to play in the street because there was curfew all day. I wasn't able to go to swim in the sea because there was curfew and there are snipers in the sea on the boats. I was like extremely like we did not expect life as it should be as everywhere. We just have to deal with that, being born there, curfews every day, fighting every day, spending 25 years in my entire life. I couldn't go for like 5 minutes walk where it was a settlement, or you can just move. And until now, I am 35 years old. I cannot go to the West Bank, which is like, it sounds for some people, it is really weird. You just can't go to the West Bank. You just can't travel in your own country. for the entire of your life.
Yeah, so many limitations.
This is really like, that's why I call Gaza is a combination of Warsaw Ghetto and a concentration camp, where our people
of Warsaw Ghetto, is that what you said?
Yeah.
And a concentration camp.
Where people are dying very slowly. Gaza, it was 1 year ago in a slow motion genocide. Right now it is in a very fast motion genocide, and this is really
Is the whole West Strip surrounded by barbed wire and armed guards?
You mean Gaza Strip?
Yes, the whole.
Yeah, Gaza Strip is, of course. I mean, it is surrounded, and there are. You just can't go there. I mean, you just. It is.
That's a difficult image to imagine.
Yeah,
I'm picturing you and your 8 siblings in a small apartment. So I'm curious about what a Sunday afternoon might have looked like. What did you do? How did you use your childhood energy?
I was reading, actually.
Reading?
I love reading. I love reading. And I was interested in languages. And,
what did you read?
It's very interesting. I was reading, like, psychology books when I was a child. I was interested, like, in... Sigmund Freud, like what he thinks.
Sigmund Freud.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And Carl Jung. And also I was interested like in too many controversial things like about death, what happens after death. When just allowing my unconscious mind to be open. Like just, I love to read psychology books, like read understanding the human self, the human identity. I try to also to teach myself how to unleash my creative mind for the better of humanity, and how to make sure that what I do is within my moral compass, my moral compass for humanity, and to help people as much as I can.
Sounds to me that you were kind of forced to grow up quickly, a child reading about psychology to figure out why are people doing this?
Yeah, because this one actually it happens to me when I was a child, and I went with my brother to buy, they call it ful, which is beans. In Arabic is ful, beans. And we were walking, and we want to just go to buy food and come home. And there was like 25 Israeli soldiers, they were walking, and they were just walking, you know, they are organized way, as you know, in military. And we were scared, and I saw some kids nearby us, and we were walking, going to buy grocery, like to buy food for the family. And I saw a guy who's urinating on himself. And I was trying to understand why this child, he's 8 years old, we were 8 years old, he's urinating on himself. So I wasn't sure. I didn't know about PTSD. I didn't know about all of that stuff. And I was really interested because I want to understand. I feel there is a gap. What I live in Gaza is dehumanization against a huge people, like along all of the people in Gaza. It is dehumanization.
Dehumanization.
Demonization. Okay. Delegitimization of everyone there. So I was there. And I was trying to understand the psychology behind it. Why people behave in this way? Why people are dehumanizing a lot of people, like, even, yeah.
And what did you find? Why do humans dehumanize other humans and call them cockroaches or other names that make them less than human?
I think this is what I call it, a chosenness complex. People
the like chosenest?
Complex. Mm-hmm. We are hardwired as a human being to feel unique, to feel chosen, that we are the best. And this is in our individualistic way, but also in the collective way. So in every religion, they are the chosen people, like, and everyone internalized that belief. So I think there is also a process, what I call it, the cycle of willful ignorance. Started by your confirmation bias. I love, for instance, confirmation bias can come from your unconscious bias to some things. So if you were born as a Muslim, you will go to read Quran. If you were born as a Jewish, you will go to Torah. If you go to you were born as like Hindu, you will go to read about something about Hindu or Buddhist or whatever. But we are not allowing ourselves to push our comfort zone to read from other sources and to understand. Then we come like here, like people like they are either watching CNN or Fox News, and they build on that. And then it comes what I call it cognitive dissonance. While we are speaking about humanity, but when it comes to Gaza, we can stop.
We choose to look away.
We choose to look away because it will really, very deeply, it will push our comfort zone. And then it comes the motivated reasoning. So we are fighting, arguing. So I think this is a cycle of willful ignorance that it comes out. And then we dehumanize people. We don't listen to them. We just feel that we are the best, or we are the supremacist people. Like, oh, okay. And well, this is a human history.
I wonder about being overwhelmed, too. It's like if I find out that that's true, then I won't know what to do. So I'll just pretend it's not true.
Exactly.
Yeah. If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Ayman Najim. He has spoken in about 75 locations in 27 U.S. states as a human rights advocate and does this on the side, in addition to his paid work. He is an organizational leader and has extensive experience working with children and adults in mental health, trauma healing, community organizing, workforce development, and case management services. I mean, of course, it's impossible to summarize your public lectures into a few bullet points, but I wondered what you could share with us about your message that you impart to university students. And I would also like to say this is something you do. So if people are listening and they hear these bullet points and think they'd like them at their university, we'll give contact information later. But what's the crux of your message that you want everyone to know?
I think it is about internalized oppression. I try to tell people, don't internalize your oppression. If something wrong, speak about it. And I created projects in Gaza while I was working with international organization and also community-based organization. I created a project, Let the Children Play and Heal. It's using like trauma therapies, like it is not Eurocentric therapies, but it is more into group therapy.
Mm-hmm. Let the children play and heal.
Yeah.
I saw that you have something online about that too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And also I created a project, Let the Children Practice Their Rights. So when I was a kid, I usually think outside of Gaza. Like you think of the U.S. as an example, like in that time. Before I come here, I took it as an example, like in liberty and freedom, everyone can speak. Why we shouldn't be? Because we are the same human being. So let the children practice their rights. It is also in alignment with the international child protection rights, with the rights of children, like as it is in everywhere, as it is in the international law. So I was putting some psychology in it, like don't internalize your oppression, because when someone give you a smack one day and other day it became, you feel down and you think this is who you are. And when a kid are born into occupation, into siege, into hardship and poverty and sore needs for everything, they feel that because of us. No, it is not because of you. It is because your country is occupied. Your country is not liberated. There are some kids living somewhere else who are enjoying their lives, and you have to strive as much as you can in education to reach your goal of self-determination and to live in liberty and without a trauma. Trauma can be disastrous to kids.
It can. It reminds me of the ACEs study, the adverse childhood experiences. And if you have one or two, you can kind of work and get over these traumas. Yeah. But if you have multiple, it gets harder and harder to get over that.
Yeah, what we are dealing in Gaza, and we are not dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD. we're dealing with complex, or what in psychology they call it, compound or ongoing trauma, because everything is ongoing. That's why I call it is a combination of Warsaw Ghetto and concentration camp, because you are dealing with ongoing situation. There is no stop. Like every child can walk outside of his house, he will see a destruction everywhere.
Yes, I often go online and look up the place, the images from the town of the person I'm going to be interviewing. And I wanted to ask you, is there really rubble everywhere?
Yeah. After 2014, there was 13,000 were completely destroyed. There were like, at least if I can remember the number, 16,000, they were like partially destroyed. And my family house, for instance, was made from asbestos. So like when there is an attack, or there is a jet fighter is attacking one area or one target, or spontaneously, you will see that the house is like shaking. Mm-hmm. So you can see it is affecting everywhere. Yes, in Gaza, as I said, it is tiny enclave of land. If you just live there, you see how it is closed. Like I can go from the Egyptian crossing or the Rafah crossing from the south to the end with 45 minutes drive. I mean, honestly, you can take it because there are too many cars there. So that's why it takes 45 minutes. But if you drive like here, 70 miles per hour, I think you can get there with 32 minutes or less.
Than wow. A small patch of land.
Yeah.
You said to me that you engage in these speaking engagements as a donation to humanity. And I wonder where you learned to serve others like that. What motivates you to continue to get the message out there?
Actually, two reasons. Living in Iraq as a student, seeing people are dying with no crime they have committed. Seeing too many things in my life. Growing up in Gaza. Growing up seeing orphans. We have like right now too many orphans in Gaza. Growing up seeing occupation. Growing up, I feel I am different. I can't go. I can't. Everything, you no. So that's why I came here, and I can travel from Washington, Olympia, Washington, where I was first, to Washington, D.C., in just 3 hours or 4 hours by air, by plane. But feeling like the liberty and freedom that I was yearning to. Second, I think it is also, this is very deep in myself, it is altruism born of suffering. This is a psychology term. It means that you just try to take what happens to you for the betterment of people, of humanity. That's why the selection of my jobs, my career, is about helping profession. It's about helping people. I feel like I am fulfilled. I feel I am doing the best I can, just helping people as much as I can. So this is what I can do. As I can educate people. I can tell them about, I can help them. I have no leverage, or I am not a politician, or you know what I mean?
Yes, and even though you've seen so much, you've made some sense of it, and then you bear other people's horrible stories and take that in as a witness yourself.
Exactly.
As a kindness to humanity as well.
Yeah. Right?
That's very courageous, and I'm sure your family is extremely proud of you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
I understand that you always keep an eye out for opportunities to speak publicly about human rights, and especially at colleges and universities. How would people contact you if they wish to have you come speak to their community?
They usually write to me, they send an email introduction that we are willing to have you speak at our university. So I check my time and I make it happen, because
okay.
I love speaking to students and also to churches.
Wonderful. I know you do that sometimes for free and sometimes for honorariums, which are so helpful because there's travel expense and everything. I will put your Gmail account address on my website. It is AYMANIJIM for those listening. But if you need to look it up later, you can find Iman through the New Mainers Speak website.
Yeah, it is at Gmail, so yeah.
Yes, at Gmail. Wonderful. Ayman, you are able to both reach out and offer a rich understanding of the systemic violence of the region you grew up in intellectually, while also touching people's emotions. You're doing remarkable work, and I very much appreciate your focusing on helping young people to heal from their trauma. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you very, very much. And I love Maine. I love the people of Maine. And thank you for having me here.
We're glad to have you.
Thank you.
I'm Kate Manahan, closing today's program with a song that Ayman has selected for us. Can you briefly tell us about why you chose this song?
Yatir, Yatir, it means Fairuz is a Lebanese singer. She is singing for the birds and for people who love traveling and who love exploring life and exploring cultures and exploring different frame of references, how people think and how they view the world. So Yatir, Yatir, Salim Li, said, oh my bird, send my greetings to my other people. So it is sending greetings to all of my friends from this place. So I am sending to all of my friends in Maine and across the United States this song.
Thank you. I'll send my love with it.
Thank you.
حبايب شو بني يا طير يا طير.